We've got Richard C. Hoagland, and we're going to take phone calls with Richard in about 30 minutes. We've still got some more things to talk with him about ancient civilization, so we'll do that next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, I'm George Norrie. Richard, just to make sure I understand this too, when you talk about ancient structures and civilizations on the moon and the Mars, are you saying the ETs did it or we did it at some time?
No, we're the ETs.
We are the ETs.
Yeah, okay. Remember, aliens have a different DNA. ETs, it's a matter of real estate. ETs visiting Earth now, unless you specifically say they're aliens, they're human beings. They're part of the human family. That's the big secret that they don't want us to know. Human being. That was the whole reason that Neil Armstrong said exactly what he said. And then we've had all these fights all these years about the missing A. What was his first phrase as he put his boot on the lunar surface?
That's one small step.
That's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind. And they all said, oh, he left out the A, which would make it personal, right?
Mm-hmm.
No. If you read Dark Mission, if you read the entire panoply of evidence we put together, Mike and I spent a lot of time putting this together, that which is at the end of the book is explained in the following manner. One small step for man. Human beings on this planet are mankind, all right? The one small step for man applies only to the people who live on Earth. One giant leap for mankind is everybody else who's out there who's related, genetically related, because we're an ancient race, and we've been a lot of places that they don't want us to know about. Our history has been stolen from us deliberately with malice of forethought. This is what got John Kennedy killed. He was trying, as you know from the historical record, to share the Apollo missions with the Russians, for God's sake. And 10 days after Khrushchev agreed, they killed Kennedy. Now we have an American president in Moscow visiting with a Russian president and the Russian prime minister, and this magazine asked me to basically create an op-ed which would craft things that they could do together, that we and the Russians could do together. So what did I write about? I wrote about Kennedy and Khrushchev, and that we should go back to that idea, doing big, huge things together for the benefit of all mankind. The economic, extraordinary economic impetus that that alone would provide the world economy, would provide for enough wealth to make all 6 billion people on this planet have the kind of lifestyle that most of them can only dream about. And if they all got it with current technology, they would kill the planet. They would smother it in coal dust and oil fumes and all the other pollutants that we have been, you know, spewing out for decade after decade after decade. The real technology, the technology that these guys have in a back room, which they say they would rather give up a major American city to nuclear terrorism than come out with. That was told to me by an intel agent face-to-face as recently as 2 days ago. That kind of technology is all ours because it comes from the stuff we used to do, the heritage of all mankind. And we have not been allowed for 40 years to get in touch with that technology until this past week, which brings me back to the La Crosse mission. Because if you go to enterprisemission.com and you click on the first banner, NASA's smoking gun, and it will take you to the article I posted earlier tonight, which is part one of maybe 2 or 3 parts. I know it's going to be at least 2 parts. At the bottom of that post, you will find a set of images, infrared images, thermal infrared images that basically record heat radiation. They differentiate in false color between hot and cold stuff. The cold stuff is blue and the hot stuff is red. And they photographed the moon with the La Crosse instruments going away that night when they did the loop-de-loop around it in preparation for the impact in October. And they then released on the official NASA Ames website this amazing infrared image, which if you look at it and you read the post carefully, and then you come back in a few hours or a day or so and you read part two, I will describe exactly why this is an incredible leak of extraordinary importance. Because all a physicist who knows about thermal imaging, infrared photography, or imagery has to do is take a look at that picture, and he will instantly know exactly what he's looking at, and it does not bear any resemblance to the natural moon that NASA has tried to sell us for these 40 years.
Looks like a power source.
Well, what it is it's thermally heated by the sun, right?
Right.
It's a sphere. You're looking at a sphere in space.
The side that's red obviously is pointing toward the sun.
Toward the sun. And the, right. and the side that's blue is coldest. That's where it's dawn on the moon.
All right.
Remember, the temperatures on the moon vary between 250 below zero at night to about 250 above zero during the daytime. So you have a 500-degree Fahrenheit spread of temperature.
What am I missing? So what's unusual about this?
Okay, look at the edge of that infrared image.
About on the red side?
On the red side. What do you see all along the horizon?
Well, on the red part.
Yeah.
I see something that looks like the red spot on Jupiter.
That's the Moscow Sea. This is on the far side of the moon. That was photographed by the Russians in 1959 by Zond 3. You can see it on the left comparison, which is the visible light image.
All right, yeah, I just scrolled down a little bit more and saw that.
Okay, yeah, you need to go down to the next one, yeah, the comparison. Now, what does it show as that curving line along the horizon?
A dome.
What color is that line?
The line is yellow.
Yeah, it should be red.
The whole thing should be
red. The red part should go to the horizon. The only physical explanation, other than they screwed up the photograph, which, by the way, they did not, and that will be described in part two, the intricate hoops they've jumped through now to try to take back this image, which got leaked out on the official lacrosse website the very night it was taken. And if you look carefully at the raw image, you'll see it's a screen grab from a computer screen with a handheld digital camera that's slightly out of focus.
Do you know how big this dome would have to be?
That's irrelevant. God, it's funny because one of my intel guys was looking at this, and he was giving me the same argument. But Dick, it's too big.
If you can't build it that big.
But you can. You can. And I don't have time tonight, in the precious time we have remaining, to go into all the whys and wherefores why this is totally, totally physically possible with known physics. I mean, Frank Lloyd Wright, remember the brilliant architect?
Oh, yeah.
All right. Wanted to build with steel and concrete on Earth a skyscraper in Chicago 1 mile high in the 1930s, back when skyscrapers were all the rage. With 1930s technology, he was proposing, and it could have been done if they had enough money, to build a skyscraper 1 mile high. You know the height of the highest skyscraper on Earth today?
It's not a mile high, that's
for sure.
It's
about a fifth of a mile. Yeah, it's a little over, let's say, 1,500 feet, okay? On the moon, because you're dealing with 1/6 gravity, everything could be 6 times bigger for the same structural strength, okay?
Who built this dome?
I don't know. My great-great-great-great-great-great-grandmother. It wasn't us. It was our great ancestors, if I'm right about the model. And again, we're not going to know this until we go there and find the libraries, which, of course, NASA's had 40 years to do.
Tell me about the Moscow Sea, though. What is that?
The Moscow
Sea.
The Moscow Sea is a...
That red spot.
Remember, look at the comparison. It's dark like a Mare on the visible side of the moon.
Right.
And we now know from the Apollo missions that the visible Mare are composed of lavas that appear to be highly rich in titanium and iron and other things. They are the foundations, George, of the ancient, now smashed cities that used to be under the domes. The structures on the near side of the moon really got wiped out in the war, the ancient war. The stuff on the far side of the moon is in better shape. It's better preserved. That's why the two sides look so radically different. The cross took this infrared image, and it's looking at the domes edge-on against black space, right? So if you have a dome that's heated by the sun, and it's the same temperature as the ground underneath, it should have the same color in terms of the false color image, correct? But if you're sure. looking at it sideways against space and it's got lots of holes in it, it's going to have what's called a lesser optical depth, meaning it's more transparent. It's ragged. It's really like Swiss cheese. So the sensor, the camera, the infrared camera, is going to be recording simultaneously the heat from the dome as well as the heat or the lack of heat from space itself. Now, the difference gives you the yellow color, which is an intermediate temperature between the blue of the terminator, which is dawn, which is really, really, really cold, 200 below zero, and the high noon sun directly overhead red part at the edge of the moon you can see in that photograph.
When you first saw this,
I was dumbfounded. And I showed it. By the way, you know who's here tonight?
Yes. I'm going to remote view.
Okay.
Oh, Robin, of course, is there.
Robin is back, yes.
And you have a guest there.
We have a guest.
If
the guest will pick up.
Female.
Female, very good.
Speaks Italian.
Speaks very fluent Italian.
Paola Harris.
Paola Harris is here.
Now, how did I know that?
Because Robin sent you an IM. Sorry, guys, it isn't ESP. It's internet.
She's been sending them all night, critiquing.
I know. She's great that way, yes. I'll have to look at the archive. Anyway, the point is, Paula looked at this and was dumbfounded at two levels. One is by what it means, and the other was by how the hell did you get it? And then I explained to her, as I was working on putting this thing up tonight, politically, how we got it. It wasn't through some back channel. This was posted, George, as the official NASA image, infrared image, from the lacrosse flyby of the moon 4 or 5 nights ago on the 23rd. Now, what is interesting is the next day, Ames had pulled down this version and had replaced it with a closer cropped version which doesn't show the edge of the moon and the temperature differential. Then further, they've now tweaked it, and they've got another version up there, and all of this backstory will be detailed in part two. But I wanted to get this thing up tonight so people, particularly people who know people who are scientists, who are physicists, I mean, this is a very, very high-end technology. It's commercially available. It's being used by FEMA and Homeland Security and all kinds of agencies to take infrared thermal imagery for security and all that. And the photograph was stunning.
It is weird, I'll tell you that.
It's wonderfully weird. It's the beginning of the end for the cover-up. How can I say that? Because several weeks ago, someone else sent me imagery from Mars, which, if you are intrigued with this, that imagery will really blow your socks away because it shows unquestionably, unequivocally, buildings and structures and warehouses and apartments and whatever you want to call them. We have no idea what they are, but they're absolutely unequivocally architecture, and they're on Mars, and we've now found the source data in the NASA files, and this will all be explained in Dark Mission, in the revision, which, if we're lucky, will be out in print in the bookstores before the lacrosse impact on the moon the night of the 9th of October.
How do you get this material? Do they email it to you, or do you get it in some envelope?
Some comes in the mail. Some comes over the transom. Sometimes, I mean, I literally had one guy some years ago drive from Kirtland Air Force Base and drive up to the front door when we lived at the other house and drop off a packet at the front door. As a courier.
And did he run after that?
He left. He hightailed it out of the driveway before I could get, to the front door to find out who it was.
It's like a baby in a bassinet, huh?
Exactly, except it was a set of discs. And it was from the Russians. It was from the Russian space program. From Mars.
Interesting.
Anyway, to close the loop on this, for those people who are here in Albuquerque, in the next couple of weeks, on August 1, on Saturday evening, the 1st of August, I was invited this afternoon to present at the Extraordinary Technology Conference, the annual Tesla Technology Conference mm-hmm. here in Albuquerque held every year. I was invited by the administrator, by the coordinator, by the promoter, producer, to give a two-hour presentation on Saturday evening at the Nativo Lodge, which is where the conference is being held this year here in Albuquerque, literally just down the street. I'm going to show for the people that show up, and we'll put the links on the website. I didn't have time tonight to put the links up. I do have a phone number for people that want to call and reserve space now, because believe me, they only can hold about 200 people, and they're going to go like hotcakes.
That's so, it?
200 people in the auditorium for me to show this data. I'm going to show the lunar data, and by then we will have something from the Apollo 11 anniversary, and I'm going to show some of this incredible Mars data where you can unequivocally see the buildings.
Last time I was with you at a conference, you had to move to a bigger room.
We may have to move to
you
a
remember
bigger
that?
Time. I remember vividly. It happens a lot, George. Anyway, the number, if you want to call up for the folks that don't have computers, it's area code 520-463-1994 for tickets.
520 or 502?
520.
All right.
463-1994. I'll have the link up later tonight or tomorrow on Enterprise for those people who are computer, you know, in the conversation via computer. But there's a lot of people in this audience that don't have computers, and they still use phones. So 520-463-1994. I'm going to show things that are unbelievable, and we're calling the presentation the smoking gun. You know the standard cliche. The one piece of evidence that proves the case beyond doubt. When people see this data after 25 to 30 years I've been on this trail, I mean, you asked before, why have I kept doing this? It's because the payoff at the end is a totally transformed planet and global civilization. Of all of us guys and gals who have been kept in the dark because a handful of people believe this is not ours to know, ours to benefit from, ours to profit by, or ours to use to remake civilization in a form that will be humane for every human being on planet Earth.
Richard, when we come back, I want to talk about your NBC sci-fi production of 2012.
Okay.
And then we'll also take some phone calls. Everybody's lining up to talk with you. Our guest tonight has been Richard C. Hoagland. His websites, let me give them to you. If you're driving around, I'll make it easy for you. EnterpriseMission.com, DarkMission.net. And, of course, you know, I was presented to Richard many, many years ago when he popped up on a cable station talking about monuments of Mars, and I was mesmerized ever since. We'll be back with your phone calls and Richard C. Hoagland next on Coast to Coast AM. On our next Coast to Coast program, physicist Russell Targ joins us as we talk about remote viewing. Quite an incredible individual. When we come right back, let's take your phone calls now with Richard C. Hoagland. Airing on November 13th, by the way, is NBC Sci-Fi's production of 2012, of which Richard C. Hoagland has been a consulting producer. Richard, any updates on the program?
Well, we're in production, or I should say post-production. All the shooting has basically been done, and now there's the infernal job of putting it all together for 2 hours minus commercials where it makes sense.
Yes.
I mean, how do you talk about the end of the world in a way that makes sense? For the
possible Not easy.
End of the world?
Not easy.
Well, the end of the world that can be canceled because of rain. No, people are going to see things in November that they have never seen on television, national television before. They're going to see people and a structure of evidence and data that is pretty mind-boggling. And I'm hoping it's only part one of a multi-part series. At least that's what we've been discussing. And it all depends on how our producer, who, of course, by the way, wanted me to say hello to you. She really had a good time with you guys when you did your interviews out there.
Right.
how well she can capture this material and break it down for television, which is the name of the game.
Well, we look forward to this. At what point do you think we can get a little clip we can pop on the website?
I will ask Tom, not our Tom, but another Tom, who is actually the customer, when we can do that. And they're very interested, of course, in the Coast audience, because the Coast audience really helped make the Crystal Skull special a smashing success, pun intended. And I have great hopes that this one will be even more in that vein, because this is basically part of what the hidden agenda is about. The Mayan calendar is synced so specifically to the Gregorian calendar that, as you're going to see in the show, that is probably not accidental. And there's a paper trail that demonstrates how it was done. That being said, it means that some people in authority, in the power structure, going back at least 500 years, George, half a millennium, have been looking in Western civilization toward what happens on December 21, 2012. The moon stuff, the Mars stuff, the who we are stuff, it's all part of the big stuff. It's like you really get the feeling. Do you remember when George Gobel used to appear on The Tonight Show?
Oh, it was classic.
And
stuff.
It was classic. And one night he came on, and Frank Sinatra was on, Dean Martin was there, Sammy Davis Jr., Johnny, of course. I mean, it was an incredible. And he walked in and he looked around. He sat down on the couch and he looked at Johnny and he deadpanned perfectly. He said, "Do you ever get the feeling some days that you're that life is a wedding and you're a pair of brown shoes?" It was so cool. Well, we have been kept out, meaning all of us, except for these little guys who think they're the elites, who think they have the right bloodline, who think they are special, that they own this stuff and we don't have a say. They've been getting away with it for hundreds and hundreds of years, as you're going to see in the 2012 special at the beginning more toward the middle of November. It's connected. It's all part of a larger tapestry. That's the one thing, George, that you do on this show that nobody else in any media market anywhere ever does. They do not connect dots. They do not present. These are pieces of a larger reality, and when you get the hang of it, you can see how much you're missing and what you got to do to get your life back, to get your future back, to get your past back. Because without a past, we don't have a future.
So true. Let's go to Kirk, driving around in San Francisco in his truck. Hey, Kirk.
Thank you so much. I had a quick question. Do you think the La Crosse mission finding ice is more of a cover-up to actually try to get inside the moon?
You know, Kirk, you are definitely an A student. let me give you the Hoagland variant on the Weber scenario. I'm really suspicious of Alfred Weber, and I'm going to hit it right on the head, because what Alfred Weber is doing is trying to keep La Crosse from happening. He wants enough people to rise up and say to NASA, "Oh, you can't do that to the moon," creating a little crater, which is 68 feet across and 15 feet deep, is really going to matter? I mean, look at the moon with a telescope some night, guys.
It's all craters.
There are 30,000+ craters. This place has been bombarded for billions and billions of years, and this little Centaur rocket is not going to do anything in terms of what's there, except to reveal what's there. Now, I don't know whether we have the time. We've got about 20 minutes minus, I guess, the end. But I wanted to lay out one final really bizarre scenario. If there has been, coming off your question, if there has been a hidden agenda for, let's say, just since Apollo, the last 40 years, there's been a group going to the moon with anti-grav technology and all the incredible toys that we can only dream about, and that the NASA that we see has been kind of stuck in the mud because it was deliberately politically kept stuck in the mud so we wouldn't go anywhere and go anywhere near the moon and kind of interfere with what was really going on with this other group. Now, George, you've got all these other nations going back, right? You've got China. You've got Japan. You've got Putin. You've got Russia. You've got Russia going with India. You've got the Europeans. You've got George Bush saying, "Oh, we got to go back to the moon." Right? So suddenly everyone's going to the moon, a place that we're all told is a dead, cold orb with nothing of interest and no reason to ever go back ever again. Correct?
That's what they say.
What if there has been a secret base on the moon in one of these sunless craters, mining the ice, doing all the things that we've talked about doing, and they've been there for 40 years?
It would be pretty advanced right now, wouldn't
it? But they don't, they can't let the world know that that's what they've been doing. How would you get rid of such a facility in a way that would have total plausible deniability?
Well, assuming your astronauts were safe and back home?
Exactly.
You'd bomb it.
You'd blow it up.
Yep.
What's one more crater on the moon, right? And what if you were using La Crosse as the visible excuse? And when it impacts the nukes, which, because they would have to use nukes to vaporize all the technology, right? What if they trigger it simultaneously so that everybody looking at the moon that night will see this astonishing, stunning, visible eruption from the south pole of the moon, and NASA will say, oh, we must have hit a gas pocket.
Let's go to Chicago, Wildcard Line. Hello, Elizabeth.
I can hear you smiling.
Hi.
Yes,
hi, George.
I am.
Hi, Richard.
Hi there.
Richard, what you are up to is very similar to what Timothy Leary was into in the mid-70s. My parents were friends of his, so we heard him a couple of times on his lecturing circuit. And he was speaking about what he referred to as SMILE. It's an acronym standing for Space Migration Intelligence Increase Life Extension.
Mm-hmm.
And the life
package.
Extension part didn't really work out because he was a smoker and he had a bad diet. But
exactly.
Some of the parallels, just even the question that George asked you about, well, how would you go out about making, you know, producing this dome? Somebody actually asked him that, and he had the exact same response that you had. Now, there was another question.
I actually met Tim Leary a couple of times.
Uh-huh.
A couple of conferences before he died, and he was an incredibly interesting guy. I mean, he was a really interesting guy to talk to.
Of course, yeah.
But this was in the 70s, before this became kind of percolating down to where we can talk about it in polite company tonight and not be thought to be totally off the wall.
Well, he was interesting. there was something that he was asked. And actually, I'd like to hear your response to it.
Okay.
And see how similar it would be. not that it has to be. Basically, there's this concept that here we are on this planet with virtually everything offered to us on a silver platter. We have air that is the right combination of oxygen and nitrogen. We have our water. We have our soil. With the rain for growing crops, we have our fuels to keep warm, and even though we've made a mess of the planet, which was sort of his argument, you know, who wants to stay here and die, let's, you know, migrate, still, you know, we will be the same idiots who try to reproduce the air, the water, the soil, the crops, and that sort of thing. We'll be the same idiot people who will go there and try to do that under a dome and basically transport everything up there. So he didn't answer the question about how really practical and realistic that was. So it's something I was curious, how would you respond to that?
Well, let me break your question down into two parts. The part that Leary got wrong is this is not about migrating. This is not about leaving. This is about saving Earth. This is about saving 6 billion human beings who, if we don't do this, if we don't inhabit the solar system and use the resources out there that are, you know, our God-given right, we are going to die. You know, just look at the future projection of the history of Earth. We're going to have more and more people fighting over less and less stuff with better and better weapons, and it doesn't take a rocket scientist to project that curve to where it ends, and it ends in our destruction, our mutual 6 billion people destruction. What's the way out of the box? My friend Kraft Ericke, who was a genius ahead of his time, basically had the appropriate analogy. He says, you do not make a fire in your house by burning the furniture in your living room. You bring in trees and put them in the fireplace. In other words, things in their appropriate place. Pollution belongs in space, not on Earth. Industrial capacity belongs in space, not on Earth. Pollutant chemicals, nasty things you don't want to get anywhere near but are necessary to produce products, they belong in space, not here on Earth. The Earth is the only natural biosphere that we know in the entire solar system. The first mission of any serious space migration is to preserve planet Earth, to use all the technology and all the tricks and all the knowledge and all the energy that are out there to basically restore the Earth to as pristine an environment as is possible, with a higher living standard for more people than you can imagine that is possible, with the minimal impact on the environment as is possible. Once you look at that equation in that way, the idea of including space as part of the economic infrastructure of human beings as we move further into the 21st century and the 22nd and the 23rd makes absolute rational sense, and anything else is stupidity to the nth degree, because it's too many people chasing too few goods for too little gain for too many, and that's going to wind up in catastrophe. So I do not look at this as a leave the planet. I look at this as the way civilizations have always worked, which is those people who pioneer a frontier, they benefit the countries and the nations and the peoples that they leave behind, provided there is a pass-through back and forth. I mean, look at what Europe's situation was when the Pilgrims left. And look at how in the Marshall Plan it was the United States and the wealth that was created on the new frontier that literally has now created the most wealthy European society the planet has known in modern times. That did not happen by people staying home. It happened by people leaving and coming back and enriching everyone. That's a scenario that I see can be repeated again, except this time there are no Native Americans to kill. There's no genocide to commit. There's nothing to do but re-inherit what was ours from the beginning, which is out there just waiting for all of us.
Okay, let's take a call from Florence, Oregon. Hello, Mark. Go ahead.
Hey, good evening, George. Good evening, Richard.
Good evening.
Sir, I want to thank both of you, sirs, actually, for such an interesting and informative show. Richard, you know, I know that between you and Art Bell, if I heard right, going back, I don't know, 7-8 years when Art still had a show, I believe, before George took over the regular show, that I could tell my innuendo, so to speak, of the what was said between you, if someone was listening closely to what preceded that. It was just a quick remark that was kind of humorous between you, but there was this idea that you really weren't welcome on Art's show to really, you know, go into hardly any detail at all about the idea of what you just mentioned a few minutes ago, which my original call centered around, but I do have a related question to that. You did answer it for me when you said that there is an elite who has, I believe, by implication at least, global control. And I was going to ask you, in your research through the years in various subjects, Richard, you've obviously found the strands and the fiber and then the structure, and then probably have come to the realization some time ago how pervasive in our reality the influence of this global elite is, because they do control the technology of the planet and they do have so much power on an economic level. But I wanted to ask you, Richard, two questions. One is...
We'll only get one in. Go ahead.
Okay. The Luciferian doctrine, as it applies to the spiritual beliefs and disciplines and experiences of these global elite that we agree do exist and have the most influence of by far, as they control our reality essentially by this point in time. Have you found this to be a reality? And that would be very interesting to hear your answer. And God bless you, gentlemen, and thank you.
All right. Go ahead, Rich. You want to take a step?
Well, that's a very leading question and requires more than a yes or no answer. It requires, obviously, some real discussion. So I'd like to say that provisionally, yes, there are controllers. There are people who are trying to manage the affairs of Earth, 6 billion people. My model now is that they're getting ready to kind of cut us loose because our usefulness has come to an end. They have achieved with this suppression of technology and science and understanding and history and heritage for at least 50 years and obviously a lot longer. They have achieved their objectives and they are about to embark on something new. There's definite indications. I mean, the election of Barack Obama is one such indication. Those people that we're talking about, who shall remain nameless, can you imagine for a minute that they would have allowed a black man to become president of the United States of America? Their entire philosophy is antithetical to the idea that the mongrels, you know, should inhabit or should inherit anything. So Obama's election, as I've been saying for months and months now, signals to me a very interesting turning point. I've been dealing in terms of the worst-case scenarios tonight. I obviously don't have time to go into the opposite, which is the best-case scenario, but I can give you a little window, which is if Obama's election means what I think it might mean, then the reason we're having leaks out of NASA of stunning, physically measurable stuff, the reason that Dark Mission, you know, is going to reach a whole new level of the American space program, as I have heard from our Russian colleagues, it's being read and intently studied by the Russians in their space program, which is how this one reporter got onto us. We may be at the beginning of a new era, but it requires, as Ben Franklin said, a republic if we can keep it, which means we all have to be paying much better attention from here on.
Thank you, Richard. Richard C. Hoagland for Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesure, Ross Mitchell, George Knapp, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell. I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.